If you look really closely at like a speck of dust suspended in a drop of water under a microscope,
Right.
you'll see it jittering around. Like it doesn't just move in a straight line.
Yeah, it vibrates.
Exactly. It vibrates, it darts, it zigzags completely erratically. And in physics, that is called Brownian motion.
Right, named after Robert Brown.
Yeah, exactly. And it's caused by these invisible water molecules constantly just, colliding with the dust from all sides.
Just bouncing off it.
Right. Now, here's a really interesting part.
Okay.
If you ask a human being to watch that completely random, chaotic dust particle for long enough, their brain will eventually start to see a pattern.
Oh,
They
absolutely.
will literally start trying to predict exactly where that particle is going to dart next.
Which is fascinating because the brain is, well, it's fundamentally a prediction engine.
Right.
We are evolutionarily hardwired to find order in chaos.
Because we had to, right?
Exactly. Historically, failing to recognize a pattern like, say, the rustle of a predator in the grass.
Yeah, that meant you didn't survive.
Right. You didn't survive to pass on your genes.
Yeah.
So we have this profound, almost aggressive cognitive intolerance for true
We
randomness.
just can't handle it.
No, we really can't.
Which is exactly why you, our listener, are here today.
Yes.
Welcome to your custom-tailored deep dive. The mission you tasked us with today was supposed to be, well, a masterclass in pattern recognition.
That was the plan.
Right, you sent over a source stack, and the objective was to uncover the definitive, empirically proven mechanisms of wealth generation.
A very tall order.
Oh, huge. We were gearing up to dissect this document with an incredibly bold, ambitious title.
Very bold.
Quote, "The Science Behind Financial Success."
I mean, that title makes a massive
It
promise.
really does. I had my coffee ready, my spreadsheet was open. I was so ready to learn the exact calculus of building an empire.
Yeah, I think we both were anticipating a highly technical breakdown.
For sure.
We were preparing to analyze, variance reduction, modern portfolio theory.
The heavy math.
Exactly. Perhaps some complex behavioral economics frameworks detailing the exact causal loops of capital accumulation.
Right. But okay, let's untap this.
Let's do it.
Or rather, let's look at the completely empty suitcase you sent us.
It is quite literally an empty suitcase.
Yeah, I am not exaggerating here. I'm not setting up a metaphor for the listener.
No metaphors today.
The provided source material you submitted for this deep dive contains absolutely nothing. There
Zero.
is no text, there are no chapters, no data points, no hidden algorithms.
Not a single one.
It's just the title itself sitting alone on a blank page.
Which is, I mean, it's a brilliant, albeit very frustrating starting
It's
point,
all frustrating.
but it functions almost like a cognitive stress test.
How so?
Well, we were presented with a promise for
Yeah,
the title,
right.
but the execution of that promise is completely absent.
It's just void.
Exactly.
But we are not going to leave you hanging because even though the suitcase is empty, the label printed on the outside of that suitcase provides a massive amount of architectural data.
It really does.
When you sent this to us, listener, you were attracted to those specific words.
There was a reason you clicked on it.
Right. So we're going to dedicate this deep dive to deconstructing that label. Let's look at the text at
The
hand.
whole thing.
Yeah, I will read verbatim the entirety of your provided source material so that the baseline is set.
Go for it.
Quote, excerpts from The Science Behind Financial Success. The Science Behind Financial Success, unquote.
And that's it.
That is 100% of the material.
The redundancy there really highlights the isolation of the phrase.
Yeah, it's like an echo.
Right. And when we don't have the author's actual methodology to analyze, we have to analyze the architecture of the promise itself.
Expectation.
Exactly. We have to look at what that highly specific phrasing signals to a reader's brain
Right.
and the exact psychological mechanisms that make those six words so incredibly magnetic.
Okay, so I want to start by challenging the very first load-bearing pillar in that title.
The word science.
Yes, science. When an author pairs the word science with the phrase financial success, are they creating a fundamentally false sense of security?
Oh, almost certainly.
Because when I think of a hard science like physics, I drop an apple and gravity pulls it to the floor.
At an acceleration of 9.8 meters per second squared.
Every single time.
Right.
The apple doesn't change its mind halfway down.
It doesn't get anxious and float back up.
Exactly. But finance. Finance is driven by human beings.
Yes, it's an aggregate.
It's an aggregate of human decisions.
And human decisions are susceptible to exogenous shocks.
Like sudden panics.
Right, emotional contagions and just plain irrationality.
So calling it a science is a bit of a stretch.
Well, what we're really talking about here is physics envy.
Physics envy. I love that term.
Yeah. The well-documented phenomenon in the social sciences.
Okay.
Particularly in economics.
Yeah.
Throughout the 20th century, economists desperately wanted to legitimize their field.
They wanted to sit at the big kids' table with the physicists.
Exactly. They wanted to make their models look more like Newtonian physics.
Right.
They wanted to create a deterministic machine.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning if you input variable A, say an interest rate adjustment,
okay,
you guarantee output B, like a predictable shift in consumer spending.
But hold on. You're assuming the reader's definition of science is trapped in an 18th century Newtonian framework.
Fair point.
Because modern science is heavily probabilistic.
Yes, it is.
Think about quantum mechanics or even epidemiology.
Right. Disease models.
The science of disease spread doesn't tell you exactly which specific person is going to get sick.
No, it gives you probability distributions.
Right. So couldn't the science of financial success just be the science of stacking probabilities in your favor?
That is a very critical distinction.
Right.
If we view it through the lens of probabilism, the word science isn't promising a deterministic, guaranteed outcome.
It's not the apple falling.
Exactly. It is promising a rigorous methodology for managing uncertainty.
Okay, I like that. Managing uncertainty.
Let's look at how that mechanism actually works in institutional finance.
Yeah, give me an example.
Take something like the Black Scholes model.
Oh, right.
Which revolutionized options pricing in the 1970s.
Right.
Oh. It uses stochastic calculus.
Wait, hold on. Stochastic calculus.
Yeah, which is basically the mathematics of random processes.
Okay, that sounds intensely complicated.
It is. But it's used to determine a fair price for an option over time.
So in that framework, the science isn't predicting exactly what the market will do?
No.
The science is correctly pricing the probability of what the market might do.
Exactly. It's the difference between predicting exactly where a specific leaf will land in a hurricane.
Which is impossible.
Right. Versus predicting the general path and destructive force of the hurricane itself.
I see.
The former is impossible. The latter is science.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
But, and this is where the title of our empty book becomes psychologically manipulative.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Retail investors generally do not buy self-help books to learn stochastic calculus.
Ha! No, they definitely do not.
Right.
They aren't looking for a probability distribution.
No.
They want the Newtonian apple.
They really do.
They want a causal guarantee. If I do X, I will get Y.
Yes. The underlying mechanism of using the word science in commercial financial literature is anxiety reduction.
Anxiety reduction. Wow.
Yeah. When an author places that word next to something as emotionally volatile as personal wealth.
Because money is so stressful.
Incredibly stressful. They are deliberately borrowing the perceived authority and determinism of the hard sciences to soothe the reader.
It's like a linguistic sedative.
Exactly. It fundamentally shifts the reader's relationship with failure.
Wait, how so? Explain the mechanism there.
Well, think about the concept of the illusion of control.
Okay.
In behavioral economics, this is the tendency for people to overestimate their ability to control events.
We all think we're driving the car.
Right. When you label a financial strategy a science, you feed that illusion.
You're giving them a fake steering wheel.
Yes. And if a process is scientific, a financial failure is no longer a moral failing.
Oh, wow.
Right. Nor is it the result of unavoidable systemic randomness.
It just means you carried the one wrong.
Exactly. It simply means you used the wrong equation.
Wow.
It implies that if you just acquire the correct formula, you can insulate yourself from the chaos of the market.
It takes the sting out of poverty or financial struggle.
It really does.
Like, if you failed a chemistry experiment, you wouldn't say you are an inherently flawed human being.
No, you'd never say that.
You would say, oh, I measured the reagents incorrectly.
Right.
But I see a massive danger here.
What's that?
If you believe your financial strategy is a bulletproof science, doesn't that fundamentally alter your risk profile?
Oh, dramatically.
Right.
Yeah. When people believe they're operating under a scientific, guaranteed framework, they leverage themselves more aggressively.
They borrow more money.
Yes. They stop hedging.
Because why hedge if you know you're right?
Exactly. If you believe you have the definitive formula for, say, real estate valuation,
okay.
you might bypass standard due diligence.
Skip the inspection.
Right. Or you might take on highly leveraged debt.
Because the science told you the asset will appreciate.
Yes. And then, when the system acts like a chaotic human environment rather than a physics equation.
Like, say, a global pandemic hits.
Or a sovereign debt crisis cascades.
Yeah.
The scientific investor is often the one wiped out.
Because they had no margin for error.
Exactly. Their model did not account for unpredictable human panic.
Which brings us to a fascinating paradox.
Okay.
If the word science is meant to project universal, objective, accessible truth.
Right.
Why is the very next word in the title behind?
Oh, that's a great point.
Right. The science behind financial success.
The spatial metaphor is doing a tremendous amount of heavy lifting here.
It really is. It is not the science of financial success. It's behind.
Behind.
When you use a spatial metaphor like behind, you immediately conjure a barrier.
Like a wall.
Right. An occlusion. It implies that the mechanics of wealth are operating out of sight.
Hidden away.
Obscured by some sort of opaque wall.
From an epistemological standpoint, behind implies information asymmetry.
Information asymmetry. Okay, break that down for the listener.
Well, in economics, the efficient market hypothesis suggests that all public information is instantly priced into the market.
So if it's in the news, it's already too late.
Exactly. Therefore, it is theoretically impossible to consistently achieve higher returns than the market average using just public data.
Because everyone else already have that data.
Right. To beat the market. To find what investors call alpha.
Alpha, right.
You need an informational advantage.
You need to know something the aggregate market does not know.
Correct. So when a title promises the science behind success, it is leveraging the psychological allure of esoteric knowledge.
It's a secret.
Yes. It validates a very deep, often justified suspicion held by the general public.
What suspicion?
That the financial game is operating on a set of rules different from the ones taught in high school economics.
Oh, totally. We all feel that way.
Right. It positions the author as a whistleblower who has breached the barrier.
Look, they snuck into the vault.
And is now smuggling the actual blueprints out to the reader.
Okay, I see your point. But let me offer an alternative reading here.
Please do.
Is it possible behind just refers to foundational mechanics?
How do you mean?
Like the engine behind a car.
Okay.
It's not a secret conspiracy. You just have to pop the hood to understand how combustion works.
Right.
For instance, the mathematics of index fund compounding. That isn't a secret.
No, it's totally public.
It's public math.
Yeah.
But it is the mathematical engine behind passive wealth generation.
That's true.
Does behind always have to mean hidden, or can it just mean foundational?
That is a very fair structural pushback.
Yeah.
If we interpret behind as foundational mechanics rather than esoteric secrets, the title is offering to dissect causality.
Okay, causality.
Let's look at the causality of compounding, since you brought it up.
Sure.
The human brain thinks linearly.
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Exactly. If you take 30 linear steps, you are 30 paces away.
Makes sense.
But finance operates on geometric progression.
The snowball effect.
Right. If you take 30 exponential steps, mm-hmm. 2, 4, 8, 16.
You go around the world multiple times.
You do.
Our brains literally struggle to visualize the back end of an exponential curve.
We really do. We underpredict it massively.
So in that generous reading of the title, the author is saying, you see the surface level result of wealth, but you don't intuitively grasp the foundational mechanism?
The engine.
Right, the engine that produced it. I am going to show you the gears.
Yes. However, even in that generous reading, the title implies that once the foundational mechanics are understood, success is a natural output.
A guaranteed result.
Exactly.
Which naturally drives us right into the next word, financial. We are looking for the scientific foundational engine, but what is the engine actually running on? Right. What is the substrate of finance? We talk about money as if it is a physical element on the periodic table.
Like it's iron or oxygen.
Exactly. But it isn't.
Not at all. Money is a social technology.
A social technology.
Yes. It is a derivative of trust.
Okay, break that down. Because if we are trying to find the science of a social technology, we run into a major structural problem.
A huge problem.
Right. In a chemistry lab, carbon is carbon.
Always.
A carbon atom today behaves exactly the same way a carbon atom behaved a million years ago.
Yes.
But the rules of finance literally change by decree.
This is the crux of the issue.
Right.
We operate under a fiat currency system.
Okay, fiat.
Fiat translates from Latin roughly as let it be done.
Because I said so.
Exactly. Mm. The currency has value simply because the government mandates that it does.
Right.
And because citizens collectively agree to use it to pay their taxes and settle debts.
It's a mass hallucination we all agree on.
Precisely. It is an endogenous system, meaning the money supply is created from within the system itself.
Primarily by banks, right?
Yes. Primarily through the issuance of credit by commercial banks and governed by the monetary policy of central banks.
So the length of the measuring stick is constantly changing.
There's a very precise analogy.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to architect a building which requires strict scientific engineering.
Right. You need exact measurements.
But the ruler you are using to measure the steel beams changes its length depending on how the Federal Reserve feels about inflation that month.
That would be a nightmare for the builder.
It would be impossible. When a central bank adjusts the federal funds rate, they are altering the cost of capital.
Right.
They're literally changing the gravitational constant of the financial universe.
Wow. So if interest rates are near zero, capital is cheap.
Very cheap.
And the science of success might dictate aggressively borrowing to invest in high-growth speculative assets.
Like tech stocks or real estate?
Exactly. But if interest rates spike to 7%, an exact same scientific formula will bankrupt you.
Because the cost of servicing that debt suddenly eclipses the yield of the asset.
That's wild. The formula stays the same, but the universe changes.
Yes. Which demonstrates George Soros's concept of reflexivity.
Okay, reflexivity. Let's dig into that.
In physical sciences, the observer does not change the rules of the system.
Right, watching the apple fall doesn't make gravity stronger.
Exactly. But in financial markets, the participants' views of the world fundamentally alter the world itself.
Okay, so how does that look in practice?
If everyone believes a certain stock is going up because a scientific formula tells them so, they all buy it.
Right.
They're buying action drives the price up, which validates the formula.
So the formula looks like a genius.
Yes, which draws in more buyers until the asset is so overvalued, it collapses.
Wow.
The system is reflexive. It reacts to its own participants.
So an empty book titled The Science Behind Financial Success is inadvertently the most accurate depiction of reflexivity.
How so?
Because any actual static formula written on those pages would eventually be rendered obsolete the moment enough people read it and started acting on it.
Yes.
The science destroys itself by being observed.
That is a staggering implication.
It's kind of beautiful in a dark way.
It is. If the market is a complex adaptive system that recalibrates based on the strategies used within it,
which it is,
then a permanent static science of financial accumulation is mathematically impossible.
Because the alpha decays as the strategy becomes public.
Exactly.
This brings us to the final and arguably most treacherous word in the title.
Success.
Success. We've established that the front half of the title, the science, promises an objective, replicable mathematical mechanism.
Right, a rigid system.
But success is inherently subjective.
Completely subjective.
You are slamming a rigid objective concept directly into a fluid subjective human emotion.
It is the ultimate category error.
Yeah.
You can use science to optimize the tensile strength of a steel cable.
Right.
You cannot use science to determine if the bridge built with that cable is successful. Unless you predefine the parameters of success.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. Is the bridge successful because it carries the most traffic?
Or because it lasted 100 years?
Or because it was cheap to build.
Right. And in finance, the parameters of success are fiercely debated.
Absolutely fiercely.
For one person, financial success is accumulating a nine-figure net worth and achieving total systemic dominance in their industry.
Buying the private jet.
Exactly. For another person, financial success means their passive income barely covers their basic living expenses, but they have complete sovereignty over their time.
And never have to set an alarm clock again.
Exactly. Both are success, but the math is totally different.
This is where we have to examine utility theory.
Utility theory. Okay, let's go there.
In classical economics, utility is a measure of satisfaction or happiness derived from consuming a good or service.
Just how much joy you get out of it.
Right. And the fundamental rule of utility is that it features diminishing marginal returns.
Okay, let's make sure we ground that mechanism.
Yeah.
How does diminishing marginal utility apply to wealth?
Think about it like eating.
Okay.
If you are starving, the first slice of pizza provides immense utility.
It is literal salvation.
Yes, it is life-saving. The satisfaction is astronomical.
Right.
The second slice is still great.
Sure.
By the eighth slice, your utility drops to zero.
You're stuffed.
Right. By the 10th slice, the utility becomes negative. It actually makes you sick.
Right. So the translation to money is that moving from $0 to a net worth of, say, $100,000 completely revolutionizes your life.
Absolutely.
It provides food, shelter, and basic security.
It's the first slice of pizza.
Right. The jump from $1 million to $2 million offers some lifestyle upgrades, but it doesn't fundamentally change your daily existence.
You still put your pants on one leg at a time.
Right. And the jump from $10 million to $11 million is practically invisible.
Exactly. The mathematics of wealth accumulation are infinite.
A spreadsheet can compound numbers forever.
It never gets full. But the neurobiology of human satisfaction is finite and subject to hedonic adaptation.
Hedonic adaptation, that's the treadmill, right?
Yes, the hedonic treadmill.
You buy the bigger house, you get a quick dopamine spike.
And 6 months later, it's just your house.
The baseline of your expectations shifts upward.
Right. So when the title promises the science behind financial success, it is attempting an impossible bridge.
It really is.
It implies that mathematical inputs optimizing your tax burden, lowering your index fund expense ratios, maximizing compound interest.
All the spreadsheet stuff.
Right. It implies that those will generate a psychological output, the feeling of having enough.
But mathematics cannot generate contentment.
No. You can have a flawlessly architected portfolio, perfectly optimized for tax efficiency and risk-adjusted returns.
And still lie awake at night terrified of losing it.
Exactly. Or feeling totally inadequate because your neighbor has a higher yield.
This makes me realize something about the phrase as a whole.
What's that?
The science behind financial success isn't a textbook title.
No.
It's an incantation.
Oh, wow.
It's a magic spell designed to resolve the tension between our desire for infinite mathematical growth and our desperate human need for psychological safety.
That is a profound way to look at it.
Yes.
It is a secular religion.
Yes.
In the absence of a predictable universe, we seek salvation in the formula.
I want to turn this directly to you, our listener.
Yeah.
Because you curated this source stack. You asked us to do this deep dive into this specific title.
You chose this.
Right. And even though the document you sent was entirely empty, the fact that you selected it, the fact that those six words caught your attention, speaks volumes about the current environment we all operate in.
It speaks to a profound cognitive fatigue.
Oh, totally.
We live in an era of unprecedented financial information overload.
It's deafening.
A retail investor today has access to more data, more modeling tools, and more real-time market analysis on their smartphone than the most elite hedge fund managers had 30 years ago.
But more data doesn't necessarily mean more clarity.
Usually the opposite.
Yeah, it usually just means more noise.
Yeah.
If you want to learn about capital allocation today, you are bombarded by a cacophony of contradictory certainty.
Everyone is so sure of themselves.
Right. You have influencers screaming that fiat currency is collapsing and you must hold decentralized digital assets.
Right.
You have traditionalists telling you that anything other than a low-cost S&P 500 index fund is purely gambling.
Yep.
You have real estate syndicators telling you that cash flow and leverage are the only true paths to wealth.
And they all have charts.
Exactly. Every single one of them uses historical data. They use science to prove their point.
The human brain simply cannot process that volume of contradictory, high-stakes information without short-circuiting.
It's just too much.
The stakes are your survival, your family's safety, your retirement dignity.
Yeah.
When you are drowning in that ocean of data, the cognitive load becomes unbearable.
So when a title like The Science Behind Financial Success floats by, you grab it like a life raft.
You hold on tight.
Because what you are really seeking isn't necessarily wealth. You are seeking the removal of decision fatigue.
Yes.
You want an authority figure to hand you the blueprint and say, just follow these exact steps and the math will protect you.
It is the desire to outsource the burden of agency.
Outsourcing agency. That's exactly it.
If you follow the science and it works, you are safe.
Right.
If you follow the science and it fails, the failure belongs to the formula, not to your own judgment.
You have a scapegoat.
Exactly.
But the danger of outsourcing your agency to a rigid formula is what we discussed earlier with reflexivity and the changing nature of the financial measuring stick.
Right.
If you lock yourself into a strict scientific set of rules, you become fragile.
You lose ergodicity.
Okay, ergodicity. We have to unpack that.
Ergodicity is a concept from statistical mechanics that has been adapted into behavioral economics.
Right.
Without getting too deeply into the weeds, a system is non-ergodic if a single catastrophic loss permanently removes you from the game.
Regardless of the long-term probabilities.
Exactly.
Give me a concrete mechanism for that. How does an investor violate ergodicity by blindly following a science?
Let's say a specific, scientifically modeled investment strategy yields a 10% return 99 out of 100 times.
Okay, sounds great.
But the 100th time, it results in a total loss of all capital.
Ouch. Okay.
If you look at the ensemble average, if 1,000 different people play this game once, 990 of them make money.
Right.
The mathematical science says this is a highly profitable strategy.
But if you, the individual, play that game sequentially year after year, eventually you will hit that 1 in 100 event.
Yes.
And because it wipes out 100% of your capital, you cannot play anymore.
You are dead in the water.
Your personal time average is zero, even though the ensemble average is positive.
Precisely. Rigid financial formulas often rely on ensemble probabilities.
They treat you like you're 1,000 people.
Right. They assume you can infinitely weather the variance, but an individual human life is non-ergodic.
We only get one shot.
You only get one sequence of returns. If you retire the year the market drops 30%, the science of historical average returns doesn't help you pay for your groceries that month.
Man, that is grim. But it leads to a massive revelation about our empty source document.
Okay.
If we cannot rely on a static, rigid science because the financial environment is a complex, reflexive, non-ergodic system governed by subjective human emotion, what do we do?
Right. Where does that leave us?
How do we navigate the landscape without the X-ray?
We have to shift our linguistic and operational framework.
Okay.
You must abandon the search for science, which implies rigid laws and deterministic outcomes, and instead adopt the search for principles.
Principles. Okay, what is the structural difference between a science and a principle in this context?
A scientific law dictates an exact outcome.
Right.
A principle dictates a resilient posture.
A resilient posture.
Yes. A scientific rule says, allocate exactly 60% to equities and 40% to bonds, rebalance quarterly, and you will compound at 7%.
Very specific.
A principle says, maintain a margin of safety because the future is inherently unknowable.
I really like that distinction. A principle acknowledges the terrain without pretending it has mapped every single leaf and rock.
Exactly.
Spend less than you earn is a principle.
Right.
It is universally applicable, regardless of whether interest rates are at 2% or 20%.
Yes.
Diversify your exposure is a principle. It doesn't guarantee you will maximize your returns, but it protects you from the non-ergodic total wipeout.
Principles leave room for the human element.
They let you be human.
They leave room for you to define your own subjective success without breaking the system. They are flexible enough to absorb the shockwaves of an unpredictable world.
So returning to the blank document you sent us, listener.
The empty suitcase.
Yeah, maybe an empty book titled The Science Behind Financial Success is actually the most accurate, philosophically sound financial text ever produced.
I would argue it is. It forces the reader into the ultimate confrontation with agency.
Yes.
By providing zero text, the document refuses to give you the deterministic formula you crave.
It denies you the illusion of control. It effectively says, there is no secret lever behind the curtain. There is no physics equation for subjective fulfillment.
You're on your own.
The blank page demands that you stop looking for the universal formula and start architecting your own custom framework.
Right.
Using the principles of resilience, your own personal risk tolerance, and your own highly subjective definition of what enough actually feels like.
He is a mirror, not a map.
And that is a fascinating place to land.
It really is.
We took a formatting error, an empty file upload, and deconstructed the psychology, the mathematics, and the epistemology of its six-word title.
We really squeezed every drop out of it.
We have officially reached the end of what is, in terms of source material, the shortest deep dive in the history of our show.
Yet, structurally one of the most complex frameworks we've ever had to navigate.
Absolutely. We analyze the physics envy of the science, the information asymmetry of the behind, the endogenous subjectivity of the financial, and the hedonic adaptation of success.
But before we officially sign off, I want to leave you, our listener, with a final provocative thought.
Okay, let's hear it.
Since the actual text of this book remains a complete void, and since you clearly have an interest in the architecture of wealth generation...
They wouldn't be here otherwise.
Exactly. Okay. I want you to mentally fill that blank page.
Oh, I like this.
If you had to sit down at a desk right now and write the very first chapter of a book called The Science Behind Financial Success, knowing everything we just discussed about reflexivity, ergodicity, and the illusion of control,
right?
What is the one foundational resilient principle you would start with? What is the baseline rule of your personal financial gravity?
That is a phenomenal question to mull over. Take that empty suitcase and fill it with a framework that actually serves you rather than a formula that traps you.
Well said.
But as a very minor logistical request from us to you.
Yes, please.
The next time you request a comprehensive deep dive into a topic, please make sure the PDF actually has some text in it.
It does help.
We love a good structural challenge, but we also really love reading the data. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.